About 50% of an airline's operating cost per hour of flight is fuel and maintenance of the engine. In this case, there's no fuel and the maintenance is minimal. So if you take an equivalent 9-passenger aircraft and fly it for an hour, you'll spend between $1,000 to $1,200 as an airline. If you fly the electric equivalent of that 9-passenger aircraft, you're spending $200 an hour.
Welcome to Commando On Demand, your fast-paced weekly update straight from Kim's desk to your ears. I'm Mike James, and in just a bit, Kim talks with Ashley LeMay. Oh, what would you do if this happened to you? It's a horror story about how somebody accessed her daughter's Ring camera. Yeah, the Ring camera was in her daughter's room. And, well, we're going to play the audio and we'll talk to Ashley in just a few moments. Also, this week's hot topic, are you getting all the internet connection speed that you're paying for? I mean, we've all been sitting there and watching a little circle of the clock going around and around. But let's say you're on the whiz-bang fastest connection speed they have. Are they really giving you what you're paying for? We're going to find out. Also, Harry Campbell, he's called a ride-and-share guy. If you've ever wondered what it's like to drive for Uber and Lyft, well, he does. As a matter of fact, he quit his corporate cushy aerospace engineer job to drive full-time for Lyft and Uber. And he's blogging about it and telling everybody some of the ins and outs. We'll talk to him. Plus, this week's quick tip about organizing your photos. Let's face it, our photos are a big mess. Different folders, different platforms, on the camera, on the tablet. How do you get them all in one place without all the duplicates? We'll go over that. And we're going to talk to a guy up in Redmond, Washington, who is the CEO and founder of Magnix Aero, which has created the first electric commercial airplane. Fascinating story about how he did that. And this week's trivia, of course, every week we give you the Commando Insider trivia question, and we ask that you don't run over to Google or Cortana or Siri to find out the answer. We want you to use the old noggin. And this week, the question's about Nokia. Did you know that Nokia has been around since 1865? Most of us know them as the big cellular company, but obviously, 150 years ago, they were founded in another industry. So the trivia question this week is, what industry were they founded in? Was it furniture maker, paper mill, steel manufacturer, or printing press? Again, Nokia, founded in 1865. What industry? Furniture maker, paper mill, steel manufacturer, or printing press? Have that answer later in this podcast. And of course, a quick reminder, this is not the Kim Commando Show podcast. Every week, Kim gives you the very latest tech news, tips, DIYs, and we take your questions on the Kim Commando Show. For that podcast, just go to getkim.com. It's not just the podcast. That is Commando Community, where you can become a part of the show and watch while we record on Friday afternoons. Also, you can blog and meet new friends in the Commando blogosphere. And caller priority when you call in. That's Commando Community, and you have to go to getkim.com. Getkim.com. All right, just a few moments away, the scary story of how somebody hacked a daughter's Ring camera. Next on Commando On Demand Insider. Well, Commando listeners know technology moves so fast, it's almost impossible to keep up with everything that's going on. And that's why there's Commando On Demand Insider. It's our way of keeping you informed and on the cutting edge of technology and what's going on or what actually could happen. Our first story is a scary one. Here's Kim.
All right. Not too long ago, I heard and I read about this story, and it had to do with Ring surveillance cameras. And so often, you know, we talk about all this Internet of Things and how you have to password protect your devices and your gadgets to make sure that, you know, these hackers and criminals and cyber criminals and miscreants can't get into it. But this was really concerning to me because it was an 8-year-old girl. And the mom, as she told the story, was that the little girl was just in their room. And then suddenly a hacker had gained access to this Ring security camera. And this voice started talking to her, saying some pretty strange things. Let's take a listen.
Who is that?
I'm your best friend.
I'm Santa Claus.
Mommy! I'm Santa Claus. Don't you want to be my best friend?
Okay. Not only would be hearing Tiptoe Through the Tulips by Tim, you know, really kind of disheartening, but also to have somebody voice to chorus and say, hey, listen, I'm Santa Claus. I'm your best friend. Well, joining us is Ashley. And Ashley, thank you so much for joining us. Now, you're the mom. What happened when your little girl came to you?
So thanks for having me. I've watched the video in my driveway. Like I had, you know, ran down the street to run an errand. And when I watched it in the driveway, I mean, I just got to the first part where I heard somebody's voice that clearly wasn't mine or my husband. And, you know, I ran in the house and, I mean, she was just, you know, traumatized. I mean, she just, you know, still just in disbelief that somebody, you know, had talked to her, you know, through the camera.
Okay, so I understand that you just bought the camera on Black Friday. Was there an impetus that why you wanted to put a camera in her room?
Well, actually, so my 4-year-old daughter, you know, who's also in the room, she has a history of febrile seizures, and I work nights at a hospital. So, you know, I see a lot of things that just, you know, see a lot of patients come in and, you know, it just is one of those things where, I mean, I think I was just kind of paranoid as a mom and, not that I ever really, you know, watched them other than when I was at work, but I knew that the camera would give me a motion detect and I could watch as it recorded. So I could see, you know, kind of what was going on and make sure that she, you know, wasn't having a seizure. And then, you know, I could just, you know, get back to, you know, get back to work and not worry about
it. Sure. I mean, you know, that's going to give you like great peace of mind, right?
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Which didn't quite turn out. Now, did you contact Ring?
I did. We contacted Ring. I mean, pretty much as soon as it happened. I mean, you know, we ran upstairs, you know, unplugged the camera. I mean, that was the only way we got this person to stop talking to us was by unplugging the camera and, you know, immediately changed our passwords, you know, just to kick them out of anything else that they could get, you know, such as, you know, this is on an app so they can just save your videos. So, you know, we changed our password immediately and then contacted Ring.
Okay, because, you know, one of the things that I was looking at when I first read about this story on the internet was that Ring said that they did not get hacked, that it was probably that you were using the same account name and password, username and password for this Ring camera as maybe that you were using for someplace else on the internet. Was that true?
No, that was not true. You know, no, our email address, you know, my husband had an account and I had an account. And so we were like a shared user, but they were two different email addresses. Now, the only option that Ring gave us for setting up this account was an email address. But the password that I used on my account, as well as the password that my husband used on his account, were not used on any other they've never been previously used as a password or anything like that. So even if Yahoo or, you know, they mentioned that before, had gotten hacked, this was not a password that they would have obtained from that. My husband's password was actually, you know, something that he put on his iPhone, you know, like it was a generated password that was, I mean, probably close to 40 characters.
Oh, so this was an iPhone generated password when it comes up and says, do you want to use a strong password? And you just say yes, because then it throws it onto your keychain.
Right.
And then do you think anybody else had access to your home Wi-Fi or any of your devices that would have been able to figure that stuff out?
At first, I thought possibly, you know, just because I felt like it was probably more likely that somebody, you know, was playing a prank on us than the severity of what we've kind of, you know, come to find out, you know, that this was like a podcast that was, you know, broadcast to like hundreds of people. But no, we even had a cyber expert come to the house and check everything out. And you know, everything was secure with our network. We had a secure Wi-Fi connection. And, you know, kind of to add on to that question, you know, one thing I would recommend now is that, you know, make sure you have a hidden network. But, I mean, it was password protected. And, nobody had access to it. I mean, we've only been in our house since April, and, you know, we're in a very small neighborhood. So no, I don't believe that anybody had, and they did, nothing else got hacked. It was only the camera.
Yeah, that sounds like you do have everything locked down. And if the password was not revealed or in a data breach, you know, as you said, it may be like your husband used that super strong password that Apple will just go ahead and spit out at you. And you're like, yeah, that looks like something the best, like I couldn't even come up with, right? Okay.
Right.
And then your password was something that was unique to that Ring camera. It does make the story not so credible, as Ring saying that maybe somebody did not access their system. But it's, you know, you can look at the router logs too, by the way. And I don't know if the expert that you had in was able to actually get into the router logs to see where this connection came from. And you could see the path that this person did. But which might be something you might want to check out just in the future.
But we did, and nobody had been on our, you know, our Wi-Fi. It was only
through the camera.
They had downloaded the Ring app.
Wow. Okay. Is the camera still in the kids' room?
No.
Yeah, I would say not. I mean, something that we definitely, you know, want to pay attention to. I'm really glad that you gave us the straight story, because I don't know if your side has truly been told as much as, you know, Ring's example or in their statement that says that, you know, customers often use the same username and password. I'm actually reading for it. For their various accounts and subscriptions, and bad actors often reuse credentials stolen or leaked from one service onto another service. And then they go on to say to enable two-factor authentication, add shared users, which sounds like you did because you weren't sharing login credentials. Use strong passwords and regular change your passwords. Okay. Sounds like that you actually did all that, Ashley. And, boy, I'll tell you, that must have been really nerve-wracking, especially, you know, in dealing with the kids. I mean, here you are trying to be a mom and get peace of mind because you have to work overnight to pay the bills, and you've got, you know, a daughter with an illness. It's got to be really, really difficult now to talk to them about, hey, listen, you know, maybe at some point you might want to put that camera back in or a different version of the camera as well as lockdown, maybe even going to WPA3 instead of just 2. And thanks again for taking your time to talk to us here on the show.
If you've ever wanted to ask Kim a question, you know, it's a lot easier than you think. You can actually schedule an appointment to talk to Kim. Just go to commando.com, the all-new KOMANDO.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, there is a button that says, be a caller. And we'll get a few details about your question, and we'll set up a time where you can talk to Kim. Again, that's in the upper right-hand corner of commando.com. And just ahead, the rideshare guy, he quit his corporate gig as an aerospace engineer to start a blog about Uber and Lyft drivers and how that all works. So we'll talk to him in just a few moments on Commando On Demand Insider.
Are you getting all the internet connection speed that you're paying for? Testing the line is easier than ever, and you don't need to be a tech whiz to do it. When you signed up for your internet connection, you were presented with several speed options. If you're streaming in HD, web browsing, and downloading music, 25 megabits per second should be fine. If you're an online gamer or do a lot of work in the cloud, look for a plan that offers symmetrical bandwidth. Here, the download and upload speeds are more evenly balanced. Whether you use Google or Bing as your favorite search site, you can run an internet connection speed test by doing a search. Just use the phrase speed test, 2 words by the way. Try it at different times of the day and average it out. If you're not getting what you're paying for, call your provider and complain. You may need to ask for a supervisor.
Want tech DIY videos from people you trust? Go on over to the Kim Komando YouTube channel and you'll see why Kim's America's top digital expert. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a video. Just go to youtube.com/Kim Komando Show.
If you've ever wanted to quit your corporate job and maybe go to work for a company like Lyft and Uber so you have all that freedom, you can kind of work when you want, well, we've got a guy here for you. He's called the Rideshare Guy. He does a blog about working for those kind of companies. So we're going to find out what it's like. Here's Kim.
Hi there, Harry.
Hey, Kim. How's it going? Good. Big fan and ready to chat Uber and Lyft.
You got it. So how long have you been involved in the rideshare industry?
So I actually started driving for Uber and Lyft part-time all the way back in 2014. So almost 5 years ago, which is a long time in rideshare years. Most people don't make it that long. But, you know, I started driving for a lot of the reasons that people enjoy. You know, it's flexible. You can do it on the side. And I actually started blogging about it on the Rideshare Guy around the same time and ended up quitting my day job as an engineer to do the Rideshare Guy full-time in 2015 and haven't looked back since.
What did your parents think?
I think my parents were actually surprisingly supportive. They sort of know that I've always had various entrepreneurial tasks and jobs and, you know, business ventures that I've tried over the years. So for me, when I sort of got in and kind of at the ground floor of driving for Uber and Lyft, I saw that as an opportunity, but also an opportunity to educate drivers about, you know, what it takes to become a driver, how to make more money, and also just the good and the bad. Because, you know, like any job, there's definitely some positives and there's definitely some negatives.
Well, that's, you know, just, you know, it reminds me of when, you know, I quit my job, you know, with a computer science degree and working for Unisys and IBM. And I went home and I told my parents I was quitting to go on the radio. They were like, what? You know, like that whole thing.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the good, the bad, the ugly about being an Uber driver. What's the worst thing that has ever happened to you?
Yeah, you know, I think fortunately for me, I've never had any kind of scary situations or anything where I physically, you know, was being harmed or felt like things were about to take a turn for the worse. I think more often than not, though, I just found myself in some weird situations, right? I started off driving in Newport Beach, California, which is kind of a beach town.
Right.
Lots of people out and about on Friday, Saturday nights drinking, you know, sometimes doing stupid things. And so I've had passengers, you know, that have kind of done everything from trying to puke in the car to, you know, jam a bunch of people in there and, you know, sometimes kind of get a little rowdy and out of hand, but nothing that I couldn't handle.
But so, you know, everybody, when we talk about Uber and Lyft, they want to talk about the money, you know?
Yeah.
how much money can you really make? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. So the unique thing with Uber and Lyft is that it is there's a lot of variability, but the short answer to your question is, you know, so we survey drivers every single year. This year, just a couple months ago, we surveyed almost 1,000 drivers, and the average hourly earnings that they reported was around $18 to $19 per hour before expenses. And so the big caveat there is that drivers are earning $18 to $19 per hour, but they're also responsible for all of their expenses. You know, they have to provide their own car, they have to pay for gas, they have to pay for maintenance and depreciation, which is kind of a, you know, not an upfront right. cost, but something you see in 3 months when you have to get a brake job because you just put 10,000 miles on your car. So that's the thing that drivers sometimes do a good job taking account, but sometimes not.
You know, I've read that. I've read recently that there are ways that people are trying to monetize various aspects of an Uber or Lyft driver. Like, I believe there was a company, I don't know if they're still doing it, in Los Angeles, where they'll put like a digital billboard on your car.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a viable alternative? I was in an Uber car where the guy had like almost like a whole setup, an amenity setup back there. It's like, would you like gum? That was $1. Would you like this? Would you like this?
Yeah, you know, I think that that's one of the nice things about Uber and Lyft is that, you know, since you are an independent contractor, they can control some of what you do and what you don't do, but you do have a lot or, you know, a decent amount of say. So if you wanted to advertise certain products or services, I mean, of course, you want to do it in a way that the passenger isn't leaving you 3-4 stars every single trip, but there's a lot of smart ways you can do it. And there are a number of services. So the one that you referred to is called Firefly. They're a digital billboard.
Oh, yeah,
basically
right, yeah.
Advertising company that you put on the top of your car. They're in Los Angeles and a few other cities, and drivers can actually make $300 a month just by slapping one of these billboards on top of their car. So if you don't mind driving around with a billboard on top of your car, you know, it's not going to make or break your income or your lifestyle, but it's a nice little bonus or benefit.
So Harry, if I wanted to be an Uber or Lyft driver, we have the different classes of cars, right?
Yeah.
The low end up to the high end. Is there a difference? Well, there's probably a difference in the clientele, I'm sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a difference in the earning potential?
So for the most part, there isn't a huge difference in the earnings potential, because if you want to drive for an Uber Black or an Uber Select, which is kind of like a mid-level luxury service in some cities, you have to have a much more expensive car. So the rates are higher for those services, but you have to take into account the fact that you need a nicer vehicle. So, you know, 90% of Uber and Lyft's business is on the most basic service. So that's going to be UberX, and I guess you would call Lyft Classic. And so when most people call for an Uber or Lyft, that's usually what they're referring to. But what we see a lot of times is that drivers start driving for Uber or Lyft and they look to Uber XL, which is their option that carries six passengers or more, and see that the rates are much higher. And they say, oh, I want to go drive Uber XL because I can make more money. And it doesn't quite work out that way. But my advice would be to drivers is that if they're considering driving for Uber XL, let's say you have a big family and you already have a minivan, then that's a situation where it's going to make sense to go do Uber XL. If you like driving a nice car already, or maybe you lease a new car every 3 years and you want to do a few miles here and there to pay off some of your lease, and you have an Uber Select eligible vehicle, like let's say a Tesla Model 3 or a Lexus ES, then those are the cars that make sense for Select versus going out and buying one of those cars just for the purpose of doing Uber Select.
You know, that's all great stuff, Harry. One final question for you.
Sure.
Are there any insider secrets or tricks that if somebody's just getting started that they should know?
Yeah, so the one thing that I like to tell people, especially when they're first getting started, is to try it as a passenger, because you can actually learn a lot. You know, a lot of people have taken Uber and Lyft, but if you go in and as a passenger, the app works very similar to a driver. You can talk to that driver. And I think the other big thing we see that really helps drivers earn more is just accelerating the learning curve. So drivers that have a lot more experience than new drivers actually report earning $5 per hour more on average. So if you're able to go out there and whether watch YouTube videos or go to resources like mine or talk to other drivers, if you can kind of educate yourself, you can actually accelerate your learning curve and make more money a lot faster.
Well, you know what, Harry, this is all great stuff. Thanks for joining us. And we're going to put a link to your blog over on our website at commando.com, of course.
Have you figured out the trivia question yet? It's Nokia, founded in 1865. What was the industry that they were founded in? Was it furniture maker, pepper mill, steel manufacturer, or printing press? That answer's coming up in the next segment. Plus, another innovator that shaped the future. His name is Roy Genzarski. He's the CEO of Magnix Aero, which is the company that created the first electric commercial airplane. They're up in Redmond, Washington. That's just ahead on Commando On Demand Insider.
Face it, your photos are a complete mess. This weekend, put organizing them all on your to-do list. First, grab your phone, camera, tablet, memory cards, and computer. Dig up any old phones, as they may also contain snapshots. Facebook has a new tool that lets you transfer your photos and videos to another platform. For professionals and serious hobbyists, check out Lightroom. It includes 1 terabyte of cloud storage and gives you tools to edit, organize, store, and share photos across desktop, mobile, and the web. If you want a free option, Google Photos. This handy tool offers free, unlimited storage for photos and lets you easily organize your collection into various subjects like people, places, and things. You can add images to your Google Photos account from your computer, tablet, or smartphone and set up automatic syncing.
Worried about your privacy and your Amazon Echo? In Kim's new ebook, How to Use Your Amazon Echo Tips and Tricks, you'll learn how the pros use Alexa and still maintain privacy. Get advice you can trust. Search Kim Komando on your Kindle to get your copy now.
It's Komando On Demand, where we talk to some of the most influential people in technology, the innovators that shape the future, and trailblazers who challenge and inspire us to do amazing things. Here is Kim's conversation with Roy Genzarski. He is the founder and CEO of Magnix Aero, who created the first electric commercial airplane.
Is a 63-year-old seaplane with an electric engine the future of air travel? Well, my next guest took out the plane's gas-guzzling engine and put in a battery-powered electric one. And the result is a plane that can take a route that's just too frustrating to drive and make it more affordable to go by air. I'd like to give a big Kim Komando Show welcome to Roy Genzarski. And thanks for joining us, Roy. So my first question is how the heck did you come up with this idea?
Well, we were developing electric motors for different technologies, given that electric is becoming an issue over the last 10 years. too much emissions, too much reliance on fossil fuels. And so when we developed this prototype that we developed about 2 years ago, it became very clear and obvious that aviation was the place to be because there was simply no good solution for that industry. And so we went after it.
And because, well, we all are familiar with the Tesla, right? And all the other electric cars that seem to follow. So what route did the first plane take?
Well, basically, it did a circle route. It took off from its base in Richmond, British Columbia, where Harbor Air are located, flew for about 15 minutes and came back. A typical first test flight, except it was a commercial aircraft that did it all electric. Zero emissions, zero fuel, zero maintenance.
And so Harbor Air is already a commercial provider, correct? And these planes, they seat, what, 19 passengers? Did I read that correctly?
They have a fleet of aircraft that take from 6 to 19 aircraft, over 40 aircraft that they fly in British Columbia.
And so when we start looking at the cost per leg, how is it different when we're using a gas-based engine versus an electric battery-powered engine?
It's significantly different. About 50% of an airline's operating cost per hour of flight is fuel and maintenance of the engine. In this case, there's no fuel and the maintenance is minimal. So if you take an equivalent 9-passenger aircraft and fly it for an hour, you'll spend between $1,000 to $1,200 as an airline. If you fly the electric equivalent of that 9-passenger aircraft, you're spending $200 an hour.
Wow.
So you can see the significant difference in that and what it means to tickets for passengers and what it means for the airlines to be able to expand its routes.
You know, the big question is always, too, though, I mean, we have to pay for the electric in order to charge the battery in the plane. So when we add that cost into the equation, what does that do to the numbers?
That's actually included in that cost. So the $1,200 includes the cost to get the fuel, prepare the fuel, et cetera. The $200 includes the electricity. So it's an apples to apples comparison that's simply a lot cheaper. No different, by the way, than electric cars. I have an electric car, a Kia Soul Electric. I spend no time at the gas station, and electricity is very, very cheap. And so it is a very comparable comparison.
You know, there are probably some people that are watching right now that say, you know, I'm okay getting into a gas-based plane, but, you know, this battery-powered plane, I'm not so sure. How do you respond to that?
One, just take a look at cars. 10 years ago, people were saying the same thing about cars. Is it really okay to drive a battery-powered car? Is that real? Is it a toy? And here we are 10 years later, and no one looks twice at a Tesla or a Kia Soul Electric because it's normal. The same thing will happen with airplanes, with one big difference. In the aviation world, the regulatory authority, be it the FAA in the US or EASA in Europe, they will require that we go through every single gate, hoop, and requirement to prove that the aircraft being powered by batteries or hydrogen fuel cells or whatever the source of electricity is are as safe, as reliable, and as good as any of its gas-guzzling, emission-creating brothers. And so from that perspective, any passenger, once we're certified, that comes to the airline to fly an electric aircraft will know that that aircraft is as good and as safe, if not more so, than anything else out there. So there should not be any concern.
Yeah, I think you bring up some excellent points there. When we start talking about the weight of the plane, how does that compare when you take out the gas engine?
When you look at a conversion of an aircraft, the magnification of an existing aircraft like we did with Harbor Air's Beaver, the weight is equivalent. We can't go over that weight because it's required by the aircraft and it's defined by the aircraft. So basically, we took out all of the fuel tanks and all of the engine and its components and replaced it with a smaller, lighter electric motor while providing even more power and batteries. The downside of that when you're doing a retrofit is that instead of flying 650 miles that the Beaver can do on a full tank of gas, it can only fly 100 miles with a full set of batteries. So you're losing range, but gaining the fact that there's significant cost savings. And the second point is that airlines like Harbor Air don't need to fly more than 100 miles, so it's a perfect start for them.
So what do you think would be next? What do you think the next big push will be?
So there'll be two things. One, going to larger aircraft. So we started with 6 as a commercial. Next will be 19 and that kind of set of ranges. The second will be advanced technology coming about that we don't even think of today for the power source. Today, we think of lithium-ion batteries. We think of sulfur-based batteries. We think of hydrogen fuel cells. But now that airlines and aircraft are starting to fly electric, just like with cars, we're going to see new technologies to provide the power, the electricity, to that electric propulsion system.
You know, I was looking at some flights, and I noticed that this British Airways flight that I'm taking from, I believe, from Heathrow to Chicago is on a Boeing 789. And then I wanted to look at the seating arrangements and things. And so then I got, you know what happens when you're on the internet? You get like sucked into this rabbit hole and you keep going and going and going. And then I was reading that the 789 recently took off from Perth, Australia, and flew nonstop to London. I mean, that is a long flight, right? So when we start talking about electric-based planes, what do you see that true range? Is there a sweet spot in that range that makes the most sense?
There is. 50 to 1,000 miles. That's the sweet spot for electric, at least in the next 10 to 15 years. That's also, by the way, 50% of all airline flights. If you look at 2018 airline flights around the world, over 38 million of them, 45% of those were less than 500 miles in range. 70% of those were less than 1,000 miles in range, which basically means those 787s, 777s, by the way, phenomenal aircraft, are really the small minority of flights that the flying public take. Those over 1,000 miles are only 30% of worldwide flights. And so electric sweet spot is indeed less than 1,000 miles. And let the big aircraft that are efficient to go more than 1,000 fly more than 1,000.
Now, what about something like a Pilatus, which is a great aircraft, 8-passenger, turboprop, you know, you can have 4 or 5 propellers. What do you think about that for private air travel?
I think that's a fantastic aircraft. I've flown the Pilatus PC-12 myself, both as a passenger and as a skydiver. It's a fantastic aircraft, but it guzzles a lot of gas and creates a lot of emissions. As a passenger, there's also some smell that comes with being around fuel. Our next propulsion system that we're setting is a 1,500 horsepower propulsion system, the Magni 1000, and that is exactly designed for the PC-12 and its equivalents. So we'll be able to offer a range of propulsion systems for these middle mile aircraft that fly the 50 to 1,000 miles so that everyone has an option. The second part of that is that there are aircraft being designed to be all electric versus retrofits. So the equivalent to a Pilatus will be what Eviation, the Israeli airplane company, is building, the Alice. It's a 9-passenger aircraft, all electric, that will be able to fly 650 miles, which is a significant distance that covers what the Pilatus usually covers in its flight. So there's two paths that Magnix is working with in order to supply and provide the answer to those type of aircraft.
Well, you know what, with private aviation exploding as it is, you know, would make sense that, you know, we start looking at electric options in there too. Hey, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today and for sharing, well, you know, an incredible milestone in aviation. As you can tell, I'm kind of a plane junkie.
You've made it to the Commando On Demand trivia question. Go back a couple of decades. Biggest name in cell phones was Nokia. Everybody had a Nokia cell phone. That company was founded in 1865, over 150 years ago. So obviously it was founded in another industry other than cell phones. What industry was Nokia founded in? Was it furniture maker, paper mill, steel manufacturer, or printing press? Well, the answer is B. Nokia was founded in 1865 as a paper mill near the town of Nokia, Finland. You don't hear about that company much these days. They certainly made headlines not too long ago. 2014, Microsoft bought Nokia's smartphone business for $7 billion to help boost sales of Windows phones. It was a huge flop, and Microsoft offloaded the company a couple of years later for a mere $350 million. Wow, that's a big loss. Now under new ownership, Nokia produces Android smartphones, and they even released their first branded smart TV in early December. Hey, if you guessed paper mill, good job, front of the line. And real quick, if you haven't already and you like this podcast and you like all the great information that you get here, make sure you subscribe so you get this to your device every single week automatically. And now you know what's coming. It's Kim with some final thoughts.
Tracking and surveillance has become just another routine part of our daily lives. Start with our smartphones and then consider the billions of cameras, sensors, and microphones. And for college students, they're being tracked like never before. The Washington Post was the first to report that a growing number of colleges and universities are tracking students while they're on campus. Some, like Syracuse University, sends out reminders about important lectures and upcoming exams. Others use college apps to track class attendance. But electronic reminders defeat the true purpose of college, and that's to grow and become responsible adults. Life skills. Welcome to a new decade. It's here. I'm America's digital pro, Kim Komando, and I'll see you on the radio for the Kim Komando Show.